This is an official download from thecustardtv.com.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of the Custard TV podcast. It is me, Matt, back with you once again. I hope that you're all well. Joining us once again is Dawn Glenn. How are you, Dawn?
I'm okay, thank you. I'm recovering better than I was last time. And apparently, as Matt says, I look better, so that's good too.
Yeah. Are you still moving in at the moment?
We have finally moved every last thing from our old flat, but we are still completely surrounded by boxes. Until we get our broadband network set up throughout the house, we can't put the furniture where it's supposed to be. We also can't fill the furniture until it's all moved. So I have currently about eight of those classy laundry bags, tartan laundry bags full of clothes just sitting in the room because we can't put them in the chest of drawers at the moment. So I look like I'm ready to move again, but I'm not. We will eventually get unpacked.
Joining us also today is Sophie Davis. How are you, Sophie?
Hello, I'm good, thanks. I'm okay. I'm not ill like you, luckily, for once.
We're only talking three programmes today, going a little bit off script, from Sky Atlantic, historical, as they call it, psychodrama, Mary and George. Apple TV, we've got Noel Fielding's new comedy, The Completely Made Up Adventures of Dick Turpin, is that right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Always with a big title, and Things You Should Have Done on BBC Three. Which is another comedy, but we will do our what we have still been watching or what we're watching. Sophie, as we haven't heard from you in a while, what are you watching at the moment?
Oh, I've just finished watching series two of Big Boys, which loved. I know, I think that came out like a few weeks ago or a month ago now, but I've been sort of watching one every now and then, and I loved it even more than series one. I think I just love like the balance of the comedy and the emotional stuff, because I feel like a lot of comedies come out that are kind of comedy dramas and there are a lot more drama than comedy, but this like does both really well, I think. That's definitely, I put it on my list already of like the best TV of this year. It's the first one I've put on there.
And that last episode though was you say with the comedy, but I think by the end the poignancy just took over, didn't it? And then obviously, having Jack Rook in that final scene, I think just tipped me over the edge a little.
Yeah, the emotional stuff did like get me in one of the other episodes as well, where the dad comes to the birthday party. That sort of got me as well at the end.
Yeah, no, that was that was good as well. Yeah, I mean it's a really good cast. I don't know if they haven't announced a series three, have they yet? But hopefully. But the only thing about that would be it would make me feel even older. Flashing back to soon, it would be flashing back to last year. You know, with the reminiscing about that dress.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, that feels challenge. Like it was a year ago.
But yeah, that's the only thing about Big Boys. Anything else?
Actually, I've started series two of Yellow Jackets. I watched series one when it was on and really enjoyed it. And then series two came out and I kept hearing kind of mixed things about it. So I didn't watch it at the time. I kind of put it off. I did a similar thing with Killing Eve at the time, and I only watched season one of Killing Eve because I just heard really mixed things about every other season. But a few people recently have told me they really enjoyed season two of Yellow Jackets, so I've decided to give it a go. I've only just watched the first episode so far. But yeah, it's pretty chaotic, but I'm enjoying it.
And I mean, you're out to the theatre quite a lot, aren't you? So I don't blame you for not having watched a lot of TV.
Yeah, I saw Sarah Snook this week from Succession in Picture of Dorian Gray, where she's playing all of the characters, which was pretty amazing.
So, Dawn, are we going to have a chat about True Detective?
Yes. I really enjoyed the end. I thought it was fitting. There was an explanation, but it was also, there were still the elements of the supernatural aspect left unexplained.
Because I know that there was a bit of sort of controversy or thing about it, because initially, I'm sure she created Night Country and then they put the True Detective thing on top of it. And then a lot of people have been criticising. And the guy who'd done the initial True Detective had come out and then kind of had made some comments about him as well. But I don't think that has overshone the ending. And I think it sort of fit in, all the pieces fit in quite well, didn't they? The stuff that they've been doing about the mine, and as you say, the supernatural stuff and learning more about Jodie Foster's character and her past tragedy and stuff like that. And I think it all fit in well. My only thing was, I don't think they sort of introduced the mind being that sort of evil until like the second.
Yes, yeah.
The Dervla Kerwin character, who was, we only met sort of at the ice rink, didn't we?
And yeah, then... I was going to say, we only saw her then. And it was more about the fact that Jodie Foster had slept with her husband that seemed to be like, oh, that's why she's brusque and a bit hard.
But then
hard.
Jodie Foster, I think, had slept with all the husbands. Yes. I think that's the character.
Which I really liked. I was like, yeah, let's have a character like that. It's great. Her character and her daughter, our stepdaughter, I should say, how that ended, that they came together, and that I thought that was good, and the ambiguous ending of Navarro, where she is and what she's doing, I like that.
Anything else, Dawn, for you?
Yes, I watched One Day. I did enjoy it. I had a feeling I might not enjoy it as much as everyone expected me to, because I hate posh boys.
Expectations.
Yes. And yes, exactly. The fact that I would normally hate Dexter's character in anything else, but I really loved him in this, really is a testament to the acting and the writing, that he was so lovable despite the fact he was this posh, you know, celebrity, big head. But I think the fact that he really did love her, you know, and it was so clear how much he loved her, it made it work.
I think people point to that scene in the train station.
Yes.
Where he's calling her and she's not picking up.
Yeah. I liked, you know, in the first episode where they were going to part and he goes after her. And I just thought that showed, you know, how much he was interested in pursuing something further with her. And I thought that was really good. And I'm really surprised it's written by a man. Not because...
Yeah, the original... Because this is obviously adapted by Nicole Taylor, who did Three Girls and then Nest and things like that. But the original book, David Nichols wrote it. But I think certainly with the last episodes where they've pushed everything together, because as you can imagine, the latter sort of quarter, I would say, of the book is about him primarily.
All
so
right. Yeah, so they just sort of condensed it into one episode. Also, we started watching my husband's most excited and waited for TV show, Shogun, is on Disney. I really loved it. I think everybody's giving it high praise and saying it's the new Game of Thrones, and hugely high quality, you know, amount of money spent into it, because it's a period piece and in Japan. But I am glad I had my husband there to explain the historical context a bit more, because I was a bit confused by all the Japan and Portugal and things. But it is very good.
And just one more from me. One we talked about last time on the podcast, Borders. I've watched all of that. I don't know if you went on to watch any more, Dawn.
I did. I finished it.
How many have you watched?
Yeah, I watched.
You finished it as well? Well, you didn't nefariously, you know, you put that in, slip that in the back door there. What did you think of Borders then?
I really, really liked it. I thought my favourite part was Omar's story. I thought his arc was really, really good, and his growing relationship with Rupert, because they were forced to share rooms, and how he sort of looked after Rupert, and that, as I suspected, we did see that Rupert was pretty troubled at home. But I thought it worked well. All the characters worked well. I would like to see more of Femi's story. Other than that, I really enjoyed it, and it definitely was setting it up for a second season, so hopefully it'll come back.
I felt that final episode was a little bit sort of cliched in areas, especially like the final scene and the final reveal. But I just thought they were so good, the young actors, their chemistry together. And for me, it was about putting expectations on people, you know, thinking about people a certain way and how they surprise you. And also in these things with young characters, I always like when it shows you that sort of young characters are stupid and will keep making the same mistakes. Yeah, it was just brilliant. And the actor who played Toby as well, the fact that he'd not done anything before, just his energy really and his...
Yeah, he was so good. I liked that it was an odd mix, but I think it worked, that it was this real stuff about, as you say, about people's expectations, about racism and classism, but there was also all this kind of the same tropey stuff you get in boarding school kids fiction, you know, the weird competitions they have.
Yeah, that thing where they had to chase the just the boot.
Yes, the little boy through the woods. They have all these special days and all these weird rules and things. That kept it light as well as having the serious stuff.
I'm glad I sort of stuck with it. Have you heard of it at all, Sophie Borders?
Yeah, it's is it Daniel Lawrence Taylor who's written it? Yeah, like him. I watched Time Wasters when that was on, and I always was kind of annoyed it didn't get more, you know, hype. And I think he's talked in interviews about issues he kind of experienced writing that at the time. And yeah, so I will have to watch Borders at some point because I do like him.
It's a bit more dramatic, I would say, than we were expecting, weren't we, when we talked about it on the podcast. We thought it would be like sort of Bad Education style. It does deal with quite a lot of issues, which I like, but not in a sort of preachy way.
No.
Yeah, it sounds interesting.
The best
and the worst
on the box.
This could be a podcast.
A podcast? Don't you have to be some sort of whiz kid to do those?
Anyone with a computer can make one.
Talking telly.
Yes, that would entertain me briefly.
This is the Custard TV Podcast.
Let's just quickly, because we've only got three this week, I was just going to mention ITV are bringing back Celebrity Big Brother. It will be on by the time you hear this. I believe it's going to be maybe 2 or 3 weeks, but they've made the decision to put it all on ITV1, where the plubby version that they brought back was ITV2. They have now announced as well that they are doing a live bringing people into the house, which was one of our, I remember that was one of our pet peeves, wasn't it, in the last?
Yes, it didn't work the same.
We haven't got a full a confirmed lineup. Obviously, they are confirming it on Monday night, but there is the sort of the strongly rumoured lineup. The big names here seem to be Louis Walsh, Fern Britton, and Sharon Osbourne as a late entry. I suppose you could Levi Roots, I think, is the only name that I recognised written down without having to look up who they were. Someone I've seen on the stage, Sophie, and I'm assuming you have as well, Marisha Wallace.
Yeah, I literally saw her about 2 weeks ago in something. And then, that was quite a surprise. I'm not sure why she's doing it. I think she's released some music, like some singles. So I'm guessing that's why, to like raise her profile with the public. Mm. But yeah, it's a strange move. She's literally just finished Guys and Dolls like a week ago, and she's going into Big Brother.
Yeah, I saw her as Motormouth Maybelle in Hairspray a couple of years ago. And possibly the oddest booking, Kate Middleton's uncle. Any thoughts, Dawn, at all on that?
I'm not against the reality show people, you know, who then go into more reality shows. That's to be expected, because they can't afford big stars for every person. And that's, but the Kate Middleton's uncle is just bizarre, just so they can get some gossip, especially because obviously there's a lot of online chatter about Kate Middleton at the moment.
Yeah, he's gonna go in and everyone's gonna be immediately like, where is she, what's she doing?
So there's no weird American star. I really like the faded American 80s star
who doesn't know who anyone else is.
Yes, and has no idea what's going on. Seeing Louis Walsh being his real self, I think, will be very interesting, because he seems quite a guarded person, and we don't know a lot about him. So
I've just read a book recently. It's called Reach for the Stars, and it's about pop music. And Louis Walsh is one of the people interviewed in the book, and he comes across really badly. He seems really awful. There's even a quote from him on the back of the book that says something like, nobody reads books anymore, no one will read this, because he's obviously said that to the person interviewing him at some point, and they've put it on the cover.
I've read that as well, Sophie. I agree with you.
The only person in the book who comes across like really badly.
Any other thoughts from you, Sophie?
Yeah, the big people you've mentioned, and I know Marisha Wallace. I don't know that many of the other people, but maybe, you know, people who sort of have ITV on a lot will know, like, the Love Island person. But
I've seen her on Celebrity Antiques Road Trip.
Right. She's doing the rounds then. Yeah, I used to watch Celebrity Big Brother when I was, like, a teenager. And to be honest, I haven't watched it at all since then. Like, you know, I was watching it when it was, like, the Jade Goody series and, you know, that sort of era. But, yeah, I haven't really sort of touched it since then.
But you were talking, obviously, Dawn, about, like, the American stars. And I agree with you. I think when it was on Channel 5, they had, like, the Viacom money so they could afford, like... I mean, in the last series, had blooming Kirstie Alley in it.
Yeah, Yeah, exactly. So it does feel a bit cheap in comparison. And even, you know, I suppose when you think about I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here, they normally have a better hit rate of people you know. And in the past couple of years, yeah, there's been a couple of TikTok type stars, but generally speaking, they are British names and the occasional American, like, so it does seem like they're not throwing that much money at it, which, you know, surprising if it's going to be on mainstream for that long. It is basically the spring version of I'm a Celebrity, so it'll be interesting to see what the viewing figures are like.
I don't really understand why people do it, because I would be worried, like, because I was just thinking about Nikita from Strictly doing it. He's so beloved on Strictly. I would be so worried about going on it and then people don't like me anymore. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's, people are watching you at all times and it can be edited in any way. Like, I don't know why you would risk it unless you were like absolutely desperate for money or something. It's weird to me.
He does feel like one of those people who would just fade into the background though. You never know. He might be, you know, a horrible person.
I hope not. I like him.
All the evictions are going to be vote to save rather than vote to evict, because otherwise you can lose a lot of the big characters. So it'll be interesting to see how that affects the dynamics in the house and who survives till the end.
So that Celebrity Big Brother will be airing nightly on ITV1. Let's do some reviews then. We are starting on Sky Atlantic with Mary and George. This is created by DC Moore. It's based on a book called The King's Assassin by Benjamin Woolley, set in the early 17th century, and stars Julianne Moore as Mary Villiers. It begins with her giving birth to her second son, George. She sees much more in George than she does her other children. And when he grows older, she begins to scheme to use his good looks to get her a better standing in society. When her abusive husband blocks Mary's plans to send George to France, he is soon found dead and she marries again. It's revealed that her marital home has been left to her late husband's cousin, so she very quickly remarries, sends George to France. They host King James I at their house, although he doesn't appear for dinner. She learns that he is attracted to younger males. So when George returns from France, she gets him a job serving for King James. George gets into a fight with another server, but he's saved by the king from getting his hands chopped off, basically. His mother later realises, as a result of this, that the king is attracted to George, which she may be able to use to her advantage. This is 7 episodes. All of them will be available on Sky Atlantic. I believe it's on Stars in the US. Sophie, what did you think?
Yeah, historical dramas are not usually my sort of thing. I really love The Great, but that's because it's basically a wacky comedy. The central conceit of this one is interesting, you know, because it's about this woman encouraging her son to seduce the king. So it's got that sort of, you know, queer element to it. So it feels quite different. But over the hour, I did find my mind wandering a little bit. It didn't really sort of capture my interest for the whole episode. But I don't know if that's just me and my sort of preferences, you know, the fact that this isn't a genre I usually watch. Julianne Moore has some great dresses. I enjoyed those. she looked great, and she's really great as this sort of central figure. I think the son was really good as well. He's really well cast, but not really my sort of thing. And at an hour, I was sort of struggling a little bit.
I think it did have little bits of anarchic moments that The Great obviously had a lot more of. And obviously The Great had that sort of score, which always made you think, don't take this too seriously. But, you know, from the opening scene where he's born and he's immediately dropped on the floor, I got the impression that this isn't as serious as a historical drama as other ones are. Dawn, I don't know, what are your thoughts on it?
I wanted it to be more like The Great. The comedy was there a few times, but it was only a few times. Like when she's asking the lawyer, you know, how long do I have to wait to marry again? And he's saying, oh, 4 weeks. Well, it's 6 if you should. And it just flashes up 2 weeks later. That kind of thing was good. Funnily, you mentioned the music. I thought the score was really beautiful, but it made it seem much more serious than some of the on-screen stuff did. You know, there was quite a couple of scenes which went into slow motion and the score was very dramatic. I agree with Sophie. I think my mind wandered a bit. I don't think it held my interest enough. But I loved all the stuff with Julianne Moore. She was amazing in it. Especially her interactions with her second husband, Thomas Compton, were brilliant. He's very funny. Very northern. And
where he says she's got too many tits and one less dick the king.
For the king, yeah. He's sort of the funniest character in it. My fear about it is that because it sort of covered so much in the first episode, in the sense of he already has met the king and she knows that the king likes him, I'm wondering what there is for the next 6 episodes.
They were very sort of positive about this at the Edinburgh TV Festival. The Sky people were. It's mainly going to migrate over to the court itself, the court of King James.
Okay. Yeah.
So a lot more of it is going to be sort of that intrigue and that machinations of Mary once George sort of gets more of a place there. One thing that is intriguing me and wanting me to go on a little bit longer is the fact that Nicola Walker is in the cast.
Yeah, I saw that, yeah.
I think she's one of the ladies of the court. So if she's the one who's going to be clashing up against the Julianne Moore character, there might be more reason to watch. And I think that's what it is. It's going to be one of those, like, you know, I'm just thinking off the top of my head of the Gilded Age, where you've got the two women sort of spatting with each other. And this is that, but in the court of King James the First. Obviously, the title of the book would suggest as well that he's got something to do with the death of James the First.
Yeah, that's more interesting. Obviously, this is the first episode setting up what it is. I would definitely give it another go to see where it goes in terms of the plot and what the focus is.
Didn't get a lot of Tony Curran as King James, which again, obviously he's going to be a major character. And they were, again, very praising of his performance here and the fact that this is a guy who, the only thing I really remember him from was that Mayflies thing with Martin Constant. But he's an actor who I think's done a lot on the stage and you know, you have seen him on TV every so often, but this is his big chance to shine. So in terms of this first episode, as you say, they had a lot to set up. You know, we've got, this is what happens. We're sending him off to France. He's coming, you know, a lot happened in 45 minutes. I suppose they had to set up like what we're doing, what's going to happen, the tone of the piece, which I liked. I think I agree with both of you in terms of occasionally my attention waned. I had to go back to like, oh, what happened there? You know, some of the characters aren't as fully fleshed out at this point. Like the other kids are sort of a amorphous blob of people that she hasn't got any time for, really. I liked what I saw. If I've got time to go back to it, I will, but it's not, you know, there's a list of other things that intrigued me more that we've watched so far this year. But I think people who like their historical dramas will like this if they don't like stuff that maybe veers off a little bit more from the historical side of things. I've got a friend who loves a historical drama, which I will be recommending this to her. But sort of, I think we're all sort of on the same page, quite mixed on this. As I say, it's available as a box set from Wednesday on Sky Box Sets Now TV. We're continuing in the historical fields, but we're moving now to the 1700s. This is the completely made-up adventures of Dick Turpin, starring Noel Fielding. Starts in 1735, as the inscription tells us, just before bedtime, where we see the notorious highwayman robbing a carriage, only to discover that it's just a dream. In reality, Dick is about to be hung, and while stopping off for a drink in the pub, on the way to his hanging, he recounts his tale to a writer. We find out that he is the vegan son of a butcher and soon leaves home, meeting the notorious highwayman John King. However, after accidentally killing him, he takes the lead of his Essex gang. Dick soon finds out that King had an arrangement with thief catcher General Jonathan Wild, whereby Wild would tip King off about wealthy people's coaches in return for 95% of the profits. When Dick refuses to take this deal, he's arrested for King's death. But when we flash back to the present day, his gang saves him from his hanging so his story can go on to be told. Dawn, you were telling me that you were really looking forward to this ahead of us watching it. So what were your thoughts?
it wasn't exactly what I anticipated it to be. It had very much our flag means death vibes. So I hope to love it as much as that. I'm not saying it's bad. It's not. It is funny, but it is very silly. But it didn't have the same heart as Our Flag Means Death. So I felt it was missing that. It's very, very Noel Fielding. If you like Noel Fielding, you will love it. So if you don't like his persona, you know, he's not acting per se in this. He is Noel Fielding. You won't like it if you don't like Noel Fielding.
So that's literally what I've written down in my notes. I was like, if you like Noel Fielding, you'll probably like this. If you don't like Noel Fielding, you'll watch a few minutes and be like, not for me.
Yeah. I like, you know, the setup with his gang and the little Karen that runs the pub. I love that. And then I watched the second episode, which guest stars Greg Davis, and that takes it into, like, there's supernatural elements in it. I went into it thinking it was going to be like Our Flag Means Death, but I actually think it's more like Maid Marian and Her Merry Men from the 90s. Mm. It's more of that. It's very silly, very on the surface, a lot of visual gags and a lot of anachronistic humour. I did enjoy it, and it's a very easy watch. The time went by very quickly, so I definitely think I will push through the episodes. But as I say, as Sophie and I both say, the problem is, if you don't like Noel Fielding, you'll hate it. And he is quite a divisive figure.
Mm. Yeah, I enjoyed this. I don't know if either of you were fans of the Mighty Boosh at all when that was on, but I was a huge Mighty Boosh fan, like massive. There's all sorts of like Easter eggs for Mighty Boosh fans in this. Mm. Like his cousin is played by Mike Fielding, his brother, who was Naboo in the Mighty Boosh. Simon Farnaby and Tom Meaton are both in this first episode. They were in the Mighty Boosh. Rich Vulture crops up in episode 2. So it feels very kind of targeted at people who were big Boosh fans back in the day with all these little references. And yeah, this character is basically like an extension of his character in the Mighty Boosh. It's like Vince Noir in the 1700s, basically. Like, there's a bit where his dad's disappointed in him because he's made a village out of courgettes, and then he kicks him out and he takes a sewing machine and some purple shoes with him. And it's like, it's just Vince Noir in the 1700s as a highwayman. It's that exact thing. I thought it was really fun, though. I like the fact that it's a British comedy, but because it's on Apple TV, it has the kind of budget that most British sitcoms could only dream of. I quite hope it's a success for that reason, so that Apple might like make some more British sitcoms and give us these sort of big budget, sort of lavish comedies that we haven't really had much of for a while. Everything has to be sort of grounded at the moment. I enjoyed it, and it's nice to see Noel Fielding doing scripted comedy again. I heard him being interviewed about it this week, and he was talking about how, because, you know, since the Mighty Boosh and the sketch show he did afterwards, he's basically just been doing panel shows and Bake Off. So it is quite nice to see him doing like a wacky kind of scripted comedy again. He's not the best actor the world's ever seen, but he has something about him when he's playing this particular sort of character, and all the sort of supporting characters and guest stars around him, I think, make it really fun if you are into British comedy and you're going to sort of recognise people popping up from Ghosts and Taskmaster and stuff like that.
And Hugh Bonneville as well as the main antagonist.
Yeah, yeah. I wouldn't have put Hugh Bonneville and Noel Fielding together, but I think it works because he's so sort of like straight down the line. Like, he seems quite sensible. I like that sort of relationship they've got going on.
The Hugh Bonneville joke that he's this, you know, thief finder, but he has to take his son along with him. Like, when you haven't got a babysitter. Yeah, I mean, I found it thoroughly enjoyable. You know, it's a very quick half an hour, old-fashioned British comedy, I think. Obviously, the mind goes straight to Monty Python, that sort of thing. They're sort of more surreal. You know, the recurring gag of, like, a wheel just coming along and knocking people over. I don't think I can add much more to what you guys have said, really. It's surreal. It is very Noel Fielding, and it's sort of spot the guest star, spot the people. Oh, I know him from that thing. I know them from that thing. You're right again about, Maid Marian, very much vibes. A show I didn't watch, but I know I've seen reviews compare it to, is The Witchfinder. I don't know if either of you watched that.
I watched that. Yeah. With Cooper. Yeah, I thought it was very similar, and obviously a similar kind of era.
Oh, it was a lot better.
Which one?
I was so disappointed with The Witchfinder because I love Daisy May Cooper, and Tim Key is literally one of my favourite comedians. I've seen him live loads of times, but I just thought the script from the Gibbons brothers who do Alan Partridge was just like not good enough, I think, unfortunately. I was really let down by it.
Yeah, I must agree because I didn't finish it. So that helped you.
Yeah, and I felt people in it like Jessica Hines were just wasted.
But yeah, I agree as well, Sophie, about the budget. That was something I was going to say, that it's great to see a lot of investment into this. I think if you enjoy sort of old-fashioned, silly, surreal comedy, then give it a check out. You know, it's 6 half-an-hour episodes, and I think they would just sort of breeze by, but there's nothing in here that's particularly new or has anything sort of to say, I would say. You know, that's... But yeah, that will all be on Apple by the time you hear this. Finally, we have got a BBC Three sitcom, Things You Should Have Done, and Sophie will be setting this up for us.
So this is a comedy from Lucia Keskin, who has quite a small part in Big Boys, and she also makes funny videos on Twitter, which is where I'm aware of her from mainly. This show is about a 21-year-old with the same name as her. She's called Lucia, or Chi, and she's described as a stay-at-home daughter. She has very little sort of life experience or understanding of the world and how it works. And at the beginning of the series, her parents die in a car accident. She's like in bed at home waiting for them to come home with her dinner, just sort of relying on them for everything, and they don't come home. The police come instead and let her know what's happened. At some point later, she meets up with her aunt and her uncle and cousin to scatter her parents' ashes, and they see a solicitor who reveals that the house has been left to Chi, which her aunt is really not happy about. She was hoping to get the house for herself and sell it. It's been left to Chi on the condition that she completes a list of things. This is where the title of the show comes from. It's like things that she should have done by this point in her life. And we get like a few glimpses of the list throughout the episode, and it's stuff like get a bank account, learn how clocks work, make a friend.
Yeah.
So like quite basic things. I think one of them is show compassion for someone/anyone. We also get a few glimpses in the episode of her parents, because they sort of appear to her and tell her that she needs to do these things. They encourage her to learn how to drive, so that's the first thing she tackles. And the rest of the episode is kind of her trying but not really trying to learn how to drive. She ends up, you know, accosting this driving instructor while he's on a lesson with someone else. She sort of tags along, annoying him. She goes to his house, and then at the end of the episode he gets kicked out of his house by his wife, and he ends up going to stay with Chi. And meanwhile the aunt is sort of watching all of this in horror, because she wants to get her claws into the house. And yeah, I've just watched the first episode so far. That's the first one.
Dawn, have you watched any more?
I have, yep. I watched 3, I think.
Let's hear your views then.
It's very like Such Brave Girls that we reviewed recently. Very, very similar in tone. And yet, Such Brave Girls, for some reason, just did not click with me. But I really loved this. I laughed so much in that first episode. There is a surrealness because we, you know, we see sort of her visualizing things. You know, there's one where she's visualizing all the sperm that went up to make her, and it just was very bizarre. I don't know what the difference is. I can't explain what the difference is why I like this and not Such Brave Girls, because she is not a particularly likable character. But I absolutely loved Celine Hisley as the aunt. Last seen in Am I Being Unreasonable, which she co-wrote with Daisy May Cooper. She's brilliant at this sort of unhinged, desperate to get this house that she thinks is hers. But she's also desperately trying to get pregnant with her husband, and she's got a stepson who totally is enamoured with Chi and wants to help her, but she tries to send him to spy on her. So there's a lot of sort of over-the-topness in it. It's not kitchen sink, you know, kind of comedy where it was super realistic. I thought it was so sharp. A lot of the lines are very funny, and her uncle or her aunt's husband is very good. He's a conspiracy theorist and is constantly bringing up the latest things that he's heard. Just really original, I thought. It's even though I say, you know, it's a lot like Such Brave Girls, these two shows feel very original and fresh. You know, they both come from the female star, and a very young female voice in comedy is fantastic to have.
Yeah, I feel like in the past they wouldn't have commissioned these at the same time, because they would have been like, we've already got one of those, whereas hopefully we've moved forward a bit now.
Well, they do seem to be, as we mentioned, Borders and also Domino Day, they do seem to be commissioning stuff from Daniel Lawrence Taylor, as you said, and the writer of Domino Day, I think that was her first commission as well. So they do seem to be looking now to sort of fresher ideas and new voices. There were bits that made me laugh out loud, and then bits that I was a bit sort of puzzled by, the more surreal elements. And as the episode went on and the stuff with the driving instructor, I'm like, what's going on here? I do need to watch more, I think, to see what the formula is. You know, there's that scene where she's looking through the cupboards because there's no shopping because her parents have died, and there's these little characters in the cupboards. I did like the scene with the parents where they're sort of spookily moving out of the room. But I agree with you as well that, I mean, the aunt character is brilliant. The Celine Hisley, you know, that sly look she's got on her face every time she has to deal with Chi. And there's the scene where they've come from the solicitors and she drops her off home and she rings her to say she's got back home safely. I thought that was good. And I like the fact as well that her ringtone on her phone is "Because We Want To" by Billy Piper as well. That's a nice recurring gag. But just the look on her face where she sees at the end that she has drawn a picture of the two of them together on the wall. It hasn't grabbed me straight away, but there is enough here, I think, for me to carry on. Sophie, what about you?
Yeah, one thing this really reminded me of is Sally Forever. It's just so awkward and deadpan. Like, every interaction is so ridiculous because all of the characters are just pretty awful in different ways. Like, and these infuriating interactions, like with the solicitor and things like that, and the driving instructor, like nobody behaves in a kind of normal way. And it really reminded me of that sort of Julia Davis, like Sally Forever thing, where you're watching it, you don't like any of the characters, but it's weirdly kind of compelling and you want to see what's going to happen next. So yeah, I'm definitely going to carry on watching it. I also was thinking about Such Brave Girls, but I think that's a bit more, I don't want to sort of oversimplify and compare, like, this is a female sitcom compared to another female sitcom. But I feel like Such Brave Girls is like Pulling, and this is like Nighty Night / Sally Forever. Like, it's that kind of Sharon Horgan, Julia Davis thing, if that makes sense to people in any way.
Yeah, no, I would agree with you. I think Such Brave Girls, even though, again, it had sort of silly moments, it felt more reality based than this, which it's sort of hyper real, isn't it?
It's like another world. Yeah. Also, in the bits where she's hanging out with her cousin, there was one bit where they're almost like a sort of brunette Kerry and Curtin, like with the clothes they're wearing and the way they're behaving. He's even got the same kind of haircut. Yeah, that was a strange moment where I was like, okay, this is a strange dynamic going on.
I would disagree, though, that the characters are unlikable. I think they're more...
Would you want to meet any of them and hang out with them?
I've got sort of sympathy for them, I suppose, is how I felt for most of them. Most of them are just, like, a bit thick, I would say, you know. Endearing, I would say. In the same way as well that you brought up Kerry and Curtin. I don't know how long you'd want to spend with Kerry specifically, but you find her endearing, and I would say the same about Chi, really, and the uncle character as well. I found him, he's like a sort of put upon guy who just sort of goes along with whatever his wife says, really. I would shy away from saying these are unlikable characters, but you're right, you wouldn't want to spend, they would drag you down and make you a bit exhausted, really, I think, if you actually spent time with them.
Yeah, I found the first episode interesting, and yeah, definitely some like laugh out loud moments, so I'm definitely going to carry on with it.
Yeah, and it does have those little touching moments, like This Country, where, you know, as you say, when you see Daisy May Cooper's character with her father, and, you know, you understand things a bit more. And there is a few moments in this, in the next couple of episodes specifically, where you're reminded she is grieving. She's lost her parents and she just doesn't know what to do with that. And as you know, you mentioned that she'd drawn her and her aunt on the wall, and so her aunt can't be that angry at her because she realizes, you know, she really is clinging to her. It has these moments of genuine sentiment as well as being so surreal and unworldly.
That's all there now on the iPlayer or on BBC Three. But yeah, so that's us done for another week. Thank you so much, Dawn and Sophie, for joining me. Do you just want to tell people where they can find you online? I'll start with Sophie.
Yeah, people can find me on Twitter and all the other things at It's Sophie Davis, spelled with I-E-S at the end.
You can get me on Twitter at DawnGlenn2 and all other platforms, Ikklesu, I-K-K-L-E-O-S-U.
And you can find the best way to look at the updates for the website at Luke Custer TV. I'm at Matt's TV Bites. We've got a podcast Twitter at Custer TV Pod, Facebook, The Custer TV, Instagram, It's The Custer TV. And if you'd like to get in touch to be part of the website, all of the podcast, CusterTVReviews@gmail.com. Apparently, we're also on Blue Sky, but that was news to me when Luke told me a couple of weeks ago. Yeah, we will be back tentatively next week. Possibly a time machine episode. I'm not quite sure yet, but till then, thank you so much for listening and goodbye.
Rate and review us wherever you find us.
I think that it's programs like this that help people realize that they're not alone.
Search The Custard TV on YouTube, iTunes, and Facebook.